Hello. Welcome to this First Thoughts edition of the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast, presented by Roni's Own Media and Roni'sOwn.com. There are a number of ways that you can stay connected and interact with the show. Our main website address is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our Twitter name is OUAT Podcast. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/OUAT Podcast. Our email address is feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. And our voicemail line phone number is 657-333-0626. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. Your hosts are Jeff and Colleen Roney from Orange County, California. And now, on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to another First Thoughts for the episode In the Name of the Brother. As my voice cracks, this is January 20th, Sunday night.
2013.
And 2013. And I've had a full day, and I'm about ready to end the day.
Yeah.
So this was quite an episode. Colleen is breathing okay. She's fine.
I'm still breathing.
And I kind of figured that she would be okay with this. So I was...
Well, being okay and being okay with it are two different things, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Yep. So in the
opening... But I like the episode.
Yeah. In the opening scene, we see the sheriff family rush out of the sheriff car to go investigate the happenings at the end of the previous episode in The Outsider.
Right.
So it is one of those rare situations where things continue exactly where they left off. Normally, we don't get that
right
at the beginning of these episodes. So
right.
It was kind of a rare thing. It was almost like a actual cliffhanger. So we have that, and people are rushed to the hospital, and it really gets crazy. And then we have a scene which is the backdrop of the doctor sections in this Transylvania-ish land or wherever the doctor Frankenstein lives. And I wish we'd seen this before, the doctor. I would have been a lot better. I would have taken it a lot better. So
I will say it was nice to see the backstory and to give some teeth to the character. It doesn't mean I still like the fact that he is Dr. Frankenstein, but I'm just saying it was nice to see the backstory. And the whole, I got to say, the whole black and white part was kind of cool because it was a nice homage to the Frankenstein from 1931, I think it is, or whatever year it was.
Yeah.
But it was really bizarre having Rumpel show up in a red cloak or red, you know, coat. It was bizarre to have this black and white and then him show up in red.
I thought we were going to see another character.
Yeah, for a minute
there. Starts with Dra and ends with Kula. So that's what I was thinking.
Well, and I'm thinking,
for a minute.
Really? And I was really hoping that they didn't. And I was glad that Jane Espenson is the one who wrote this episode. And so she did an excellent job as usual.
Yeah.
She knows her stuff. And so she handled this very well.
Well, and the only reason I say...
In spite of the fact that I still don't like the fact that he's Frankenstein. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, the reason I thought he was Dracula for a moment there is because of the pendant around his neck on his shirt, and it was red. And anyhow, but at this point right now, that does not seem to be the case. So
there were two things in this episode, and I'll talk about the first one because that happened right up front when we saw Rumpel meet him. That Rumpel said that sort of made me say, well, still not keen on it, but at least it's kind of all right. It explains things. What he said was, you know, in your land, you do things a little differently. We do things, you know, very different in my land.
Right.
So it was kind of like he was, which we already kind of knew he was from a different land, but the way he kind of put it across made it seem like he'd transferred himself across almost like time and space a little bit.
I want to talk about the true love kiss that didn't do anything. That probably was not a true love kiss, unfortunately.
Well, okay.
So
I still think it could have been a true love's kiss, but I don't think that it's going to work on this type of curse. That's the problem. But okay. Again, true love's kiss can break any curse, supposedly.
Right. And we can see that there is a mother with her child's kiss and proclamation of I love you. So, you know, that could be as well. But
right.
Gerhardt,
yes.
Which is Victor Frankenstein's brother.
Yes.
Got a watch from his father, from their father.
Right.
Who came from his mother.
It was her father's watch, pocket watch.
From their grandfather.
Right.
On her mother's side. And so, you know, again, we see time at a watch and that kind of thing. So,
well, it was a family heirloom.
Right.
And the sad thing is that the conversation between Victor and Gerhardt afterwards outside, it was very clear that they both knew their mother wanted Victor to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost seems to me like their mother favored Victor and their father favored Gerhardt.
Yeah.
And because mother's dead, Victor took a back seat because father loves Gerhardt more. And it's very obvious that he does. And for him to, you know, give the thing that meant the most to Victor, to his brother, that was crushing.
Yeah.
Just a crushing blow.
So when you see two brothers, that brings up biblical stories, that brings up Shakespearean stories, brings up all these different emotions. And I told you during the episode, I said this was interesting because for once we see a father and son story.
Right.
You know, yes, you've got Rumpel, you've got Bay, but normally it's mother and son or mother and daughter. And that's kind of, it's heavy on the mother's side
because
there's a lot of moms.
We have
females,
seen King George and Charming. So there's that. But yes, I agree with you. It's a pretty heavy duty. It was interesting and a little bit of a change of a pace.
So Victor got a commission, and I guess it's a, it's kind of like you're drafted, I guess.
Okay. So commissions, if I'm not mistaken, were basically buying an officer's position into the army without having to go through the draft, without having to go through the normal, you know, fighting and training and what have you. And it happened quite a bit where fathers would buy their sons' commissions into the army and basically buy them into an officer's position where they didn't have to start as a grunt and work their way up. So it was prestigious, but at the same time, it was kind of like, it's the easy, spoiled rich kid's way around it. I could be totally wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Well, the for however he got it, probably money, obviously, he got into the Mobile 34th as a wartime physician.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you're going to learn on the dying, I guess that's one way to kind of really push forward. Because his father obviously seemed pretty perturbed with his son using his, you know, money and time and whatever.
Right.
Just on these experiments, you know.
That weren't doing anything.
Right.
Weren't yielding anything. And that was really an interesting thing. As he said, you know, it's going to be really hard to do your work, your research, without my money.
Yep.
So, and even Gerhardt said, no, but it's, you know, he's making progress. And he believed in him. He believed in his work.
He said he was going to find another way, and that was the thread with Whale, is finding another way, you know, finding another way to do his work, finding another way to bring back his brother, as we find out, find another way. So there's always another way, or there's Rumpel. There's always another way to do whatever. So... that was I think, his little thread in the episode.
Well, that, but also what I think was very heavy for me, what I took from what he was saying is that he wanted the reputation of the name Frankenstein to have eternal life associated with it instead of nothing. Because I think it honestly stems from what his father thought of him. His father thought he was wasting his time, wasting his education, wasting whatever, his money on ridiculous, you know, pursuits. And I think he was so, he desperately wanted his father's, you know, approval. So he felt that the only way to do that is to, you know, do something so great that no one else could do it. Mm-hmm. And that would be, well, what can nobody else do? Well, eternal life.
True.
So I think that's where, that's what I got out of it. A lot of it was, yeah, there's another way. But I think that the other way for him is always driven by, I need my father's approval. I need my father's love. And he didn't feel like he had it because he knew that Gerhard was the favorite. It was very obvious. I mean, it was very tragic, actually, how very one-sided the father was towards the boys.
And you mentioned while we were watching that Grumpy still cares about Belle. And it reminded me of the exchange that they had at the pub in the last episode. About the Yagwai and all that kind of stuff. So,
because that was the thing, and it was funny because they didn't even have the camera on him, but I heard off screen, you know, how is Belle? Take care of Belle. And it was Grumpy who said that. So.
And if anybody, if anybody had any kind of inclination about, you know, we got an email and there's probably a lot of people that are like, is this a family show? Hook rolled off some of the most.
Oh my gosh. Blatant.
Blatant.
Overtly,
over the line. I mean, look,
sexual,
I ain't a
comments.
I get it and all this kind of stuff. But I was like,
but yeah, that was blatant.
I was very surprised.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean,
that was overtly.
It ain't me. I don't owe to ABC.
Nope.
You know, but man. So.
He was not terribly subtle.
No, no. And I guess he likes Emma pretty well.
Yeah, he does. Now, granted, children may not get those innuendos as well as adults will. But, yeah, that was very, very blatant.
So, you know, in keeping with the discussion in the Queen of Hearts, it was interesting that Hook said Belle is where Gold keeps his heart.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, is that idea that his heart is given to another and that kind of a thing. So,
well, I think the thing was that he recognizes that Mila was taken from him completely, which hurt. But he's never really gotten over that. But I think he knows that to hurt Rumpel even more would be to take Belle partially away from him. That's that was a thing. Turn Belle against him somehow, some way. That would have been the ultimate revenge. And it was. And he's already accomplished that. But I thought it was really interesting is the way Emma put it. She's like, if I was going to bet on Dead Man of the Year, it'd be you. You are chained up to a bed. You are very seriously hurt. And you have pissed off a man who is walking free, has magic, and you just hurt the thing he loves the most. Yeah, not a good idea. He didn't think that one through. And he really did, but at the same time, she's right. But again, I still say Hook is ready to go. If death is what is next for him, he's fine with that because that reunites him with Mila anyway.
Right.
So I think Hook doesn't care either way. I think he wanted to make sure he lived long enough to see Belle turn against Rumpel, or
that's true,
for Rumpel to lose Belle in some way, shape, or form. And he's done that. Now I don't think he cares whether he lives or dies, frankly. I hope he stays around for a little while because he's so pretty.
Lots of big mentions and inclusions tonight. One was Twitter. They talked about Greg Mendel, I believe his name was, the outsider stranger. Pennsylvania driver person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he was tweeting pictures of himself, of his dinner. He was tweeting pictures of his dinner.
Right.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
And also they mentioned E.T. and Splash, which was kind of fun because I 28 years, they were kind of stuck in the 80s. So I guess, in a manner of speaking, that was the only movies that they could watch.
Right.
The 83, Splash and E.T. So.
Which is kind of funny when you think about it. And actually, those two specific movies had similar themes.
Sure.
And the whole point of why Grumpy brought them up was because they dealt with things that were not normal.
Yeah.
And how, you know, they examined the heck out of those, you know, those creatures. Because they're not human. So, you know, and so in this case, that's why he's like, hey. Anyway, but it also, interestingly enough, E.T., didn't E.T. bring the little boy back to life or heal him?
Yeah, yeah.
And then in Splash, well, she saved his life. He drowned, yeah. And she saved his life, don't you think? I mean,
They were linked together, E.T. and the boy. I can't think of his name now.
Elliot.
He healed flowers.
Well, yes, but I know he touched Elliot's finger and he healed.
He was cut. Yeah, yeah,
he was cut.
He said, ouch, and that's right.
I thought at the end, he ended up, bottom line is, I know that somebody was brought back to life, essentially.
E.T. died.
Near death door, yes.
And then E.T. came back, and I think it was because he had to go back home, whatever. It's been a while since I watched
the movie. I haven't
seen
E.T., but what I'm saying is, returning from the dead or near death. It was because he drowned. He started to drown and she saved him from death. She breathed life into him and brought him back to life.
Okay.
I know you can say it's a stretch, but I don't think it is. I think that was very clever and very purposely selected, those two movies, because there's a number of movies they could have pulled out of the hat that had to do with magical creatures and things. Those two specifically, though, had very close running themes, if you ask me. All I'm saying is I think I might ask Jane Espenson. Purposeful selection of E.T. and Splash, similar themes to Frankenstein and the whole episode.
Ruby isn't a very good tracker when she's tracking Regina, so
she didn't know
where she is.
Well, yeah, but think about, how does Ruby track? She tracks by smelling something that the person was wearing. They don't have any of Regina's clothing or any of her personal possessions, so she can't track her if she can't smell her. It's like a dog, right?
There's plenty of evil Regal jokes starting right now, and we're not going there, but you're right. Normally,
so that's why
she has a shawl.
She normally has
something
to smell.
Yep.
And that's a typical, very typical canine thing. Dogs, you can't just say, hey, go smell this. Dogs need to have a reference point, and she didn't have a reference point. So
Dr. Wales, MD, I guess we could kind of go the same place as Archie's. credentials.
No, I don't think he really was a doctor.
Kind of a kooky doctor.
It doesn't matter.
Digging up dead bodies.
Right, but it doesn't matter because...
Okay.
Well, think about it. If he was commissioned in the Army as a doctor, he would have had to have had a doctorate to do so.
I think he was commissioned just to get out of the house. I think his father paid whatever and said, yeah,
maybe
kind of operate.
But he obviously had some education, more than Archie would have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I think he at least, if he wasn't really credentialed as a doctor, he at least had some training and education to be able to at least pass as a doctor. And the fact that he was able to go perform surgery and save that guy.
Yeah.
I think that qualifies him as a doctor.
He probably put a sponge in him and sewed him up and say, there you go.
No.
We're all good.
No.
When Dr. Whale asked Gold to save the mystery driver. Or no, was it Hook? No. It was the guy from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the guy from Pennsylvania.
It was a lot like Jack being asked to save Ben. Just that moment of, you know, kind of weighing the pros and cons of doing
it.
Yeah.
Well, and his response, wow. That is a man who is just desperately hurting. He couldn't care less about that guy. He was more concerned about Belle and the fact that Belle now knows, doesn't have a clue who she was and doesn't know who he is. And that just ripped his little heart out. And that just made me so sad for him and for her.
Yep. And, it was a poor downward spiral for old Gold. He just was not having a good evening.
No, most of them weren't having a very good evening today.
Yeah.
Tonight's episode was really a tough one.
Yeah. And, you know, not that, you know, we didn't like it. You know,
it was great, actually.
You know, and I figured you would enjoy it better just from the little bits I've seen here and there. But, yeah, everybody was really... It was sad. It was sad. It was hard to watch. It was so many...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
When Rumpel went in and kissed her, it was the sweetest kiss. It was so earnest, and he was so hoping that was going to be the thing that brought... Do you have any idea what a sacrifice that was for him to do that? Because it could have stripped him of his powers.
Yep.
And he was willing to sacrifice that? That's insane. I mean, that is love.
Mm-hmm.
He was willing to make the biggest sacrifice of his life, because not only would he sacrifice his powers, he would also inevitably sacrifice finding his son.
So they have both, Rumpel or Gold and Regina, have reached the end of their redemption. And we'll talk about Regina in a bit, but... for sure, at the end of the episode, the scene with Belle, he reached the end of his redemption and said, "Forget it. I'm going to put this thing on pause and hold or whatever, and I'm going to go get my son. I've really focused here. I wanted to kind of make sure that everything was fine with my relationship and all this kind of stuff, but now." I basically have to start over. And I saw the end of the path to redemption, and it was like, yeah, we're going to change that. So, I love the whole discussion in the hospital about, do we save Greg? Do we let him die? Mm. Do we save him and lose the town? Is he going to tell, you know, Entertainment Tonight or wherever, about us? You know, what does he know? What does he not know? And they were going to let him die. And then David said, no, we got to, I think they kind of had a consensus.
He took charge. He was very, very much in charge. And that was really cool. Again, I love that side of him. I think that's fantastic because it's so opposite from David Nolan, which is great. It was that whole greater good. What is the greater good?
Mm-hmm.
One dies or hundreds, maybe thousands die. I mean, that was pretty intense, actually.
And so all the people that wanted Star Wars in Once Upon a Time, there you go. You got a ringtone. That may or may not be all of it. But we'll talk about what Henry said about the book later on. But at least this is the beginning, or this is it. But anyway, Star Wars ringtone was kind of funny.
Yeah, it was very amusing, actually.
So Rumpel von Stiltskin.
That was a very funny joke, actually.
And he was talking about witchcraft, and he said it was basically kind of a weak version of magic.
Yeah.
Back in his land.
Right.
And
are you doing okay tonight?
No, I'm not. I'm really not. I'm tired. I work today. It's been a long day.
Yes.
And this episode has really kind of thrown me. So
I'll help you through it. Just trust me. I'll help you through it. I actually paid really close attention, and so I feel like I know what's going on. I actually feel, like I said, I liked this episode. I liked it. I thought it was really well written. It was very well done. And wow, the actors, holy cow. Especially the guy who played Gerhard. He was stellar.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Instead of, I don't know, loaves, fish, whatever, we saw Rumpel multiply money.
Oh, you do. That was awesome.
He was just pouring this money, and it just kind of grew on the ground. So
yeah, because that pouch was tiny, yeah. And in reality, it would have held a handful of coins. But he ended up with, and that was the whole, I think the reason why he did that was because he wanted to prove the point. You have a little witchcraft, whatever. I got magic. And this is what magic can do.
Yeah.
So I
noticed the box in Gold Shop, but I didn't realize. I said, "Have we seen it before? Is that why he's staring at it?" But he was trying to figure out what it was, mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we see Cora, and it turns out that Cora and Rumpel have some kind of a past.
Which we suspected was the case.
So.
And it creeped me out and just made my heart hurt so badly when he shook hands with her to call the truce. And then she very seductively said, "Let's seal this deal like we used to." And I'm like, "No, you cannot do that to Belle." Mm. And he did. And I was like, but you know what? His heart wasn't in that. Still, it just creeped me out and grossed me. I'm like, no. Cora and Rump, no.
So it's basically trading a son for a daughter, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll help you find Bay. You help me
get my daughter back.
Get my daughter back. And there's that. I wonder where they filmed the graveyard in Fairytale Land in Vancouver. I wonder.
Yeah. That was a really cool cemetery.
There was a cemetery in
Langley?
No. It's a show with the other Abrams show? About
Fringe?
No. The one that you liked.
Oh, Alcatraz.
Right. I wonder, because I remember there was a cemetery scene in Alcatraz.
Yes, there was. Yes, there was. So, yeah, and then Alcatraz was filmed in Vancouver as well. I don't know.
Because it could have been green screen, but it looked kind of real to me, so.
It's hard to tell, yeah. That was a really interesting, that whole scene was just, it was really cool because Freudian slip, man. You know why? Because you said Transylvania earlier, and that's where oh my gosh, I can't even talk.
See, it's you too. I know. I'm not.
Let me rewind. Dracula is in Transylvania. Yeah. Frankenstein is in Germany. Yeah. And he wore a very traditional German hat and cloak in the cemetery. That was way cool.
So Gerhardt was shot, and what it looked like was somebody was trying to drive off grave robbers or something. We don't know.
It was the grave keeper, right? Yeah. It was the cemetery graveyard keeper.
Yeah.
And he thought they were absolutely desecrating graves, which they kind of were. Victor was. Gerhardt was not. But yeah, probably grave robbers, which was pretty common. And so of course, naturally being the good graveyard cemetery keeper that he was, groundskeeper, he tried to scare them off.
So beside just the grave person, whatever, who shot the brother? I think that's going to be, you know, a question that will be answered hopefully. Unless it's just some guy.
I don't think it's anybody of consequence. I think it was just the groundskeeper. You know what I mean? Nameless, faceless groundskeeper. That's all. I mean, maybe, but it just seemed like it was just a coincidental, you know, element to the story that really doesn't have any bearing on anything future, so to speak.
So who is the her? Who is Greg's her
that
keeps calling? So that's probably going to be one of those questions that we are asking.
Girlfriend, wife, or who knows what.
Yeah.
But somebody, female.
That heart vault portal room.
Mm-hmm.
That was a busy room. There was a lot of stuff in there. There was trees with red things hanging on it. And there was some wallpaper going on. And there was some, my goodness.
That room was unbelievably beautiful. The set decorators get a huge, major, big time gold star from me for that. The tree was a white tree with crystal garland and red apples in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then most everything in there was black and white with a little bit of red. So very evil. And her, one of her costumes from, you know, Fairytale Land was in the corner. The one she was wearing, if I'm not mistaken, the day she enacted the curse. Or possibly the one she wore when she interrupted Snow and Charming's wedding. But it was one of the costumes in the corner. And then the mirrors and, yeah, it was freaking awesome. That was a beautiful room. I was like, holy cow.
I guess the I'm so used to trees and foresty wallpaper. That was not foresty
wallpaper. No.
So.
But again, that was her retreat back into her old life. It was like she was running back to her old life. And yet it wasn't completely her whole life, her old life, because it was more white than black. If you look at the contrast between that room and her office, say, for example, her office has a lot more black with white accents. This room seemed to have a lot more white, a little bit of red, and some black, a bit more black. But it was more white than anything else. It was stunning. It was absolutely stunning.
I'll go with you on that. I don't. All I know is it was just black and white. And there was a, yeah.
There was the bowl, you know, the white bowl of apples that's in her office that was in there. And then one of the mirrors that's in there was the one from her actual castle from Fairytale Land. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there was some really cool stuff in there. Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, I saw that and I went, oh, man. That would be a real pain to have to clean, though.
Right. So I said, like, a half second before the reveal, I said, Henry's Cora.
Yep.
Because it just, it seemed kind of weird.
Too obvious.
Yeah, it was weird.
Well, and I'm thinking to myself, what is Henry doing going through to the crypt late at night by himself?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's watching him, because he wasn't at the hospital, and I was thinking to myself, Henry's not at the hospital. And it didn't dawn on me that it was Granny that would be watching him, but that makes total sense. And we found that out later. But I'm thinking to myself, yeah, Henry's not going to be going out, especially if he's afraid that Regina's going to come after him. So there's no way he's going to go out at night. Because remember, he was afraid of her. So.
Well, Cora called Regina sweetheart. And, you know, I had a nice discussion with an evil regal a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what do you think about Cora? And I got, the response was a pause first.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, it's complicated. And, you know, as much as I said, I really bought into the whole conversation that Gold had with Belle in the last episode. Mm-hmm. I did not buy anything that Cora was saying to Regina about, oh, I just basically want us to go back, not back to the way things were, but to better times. And, you know, weaving her mistrust into the situation when she was going to go half. Regina was taking her, mm-hmm. basically like a little kid who broke a window,
mm-hmm.
over to somebody else's house and say, you are going to tell them what you did.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, but obviously framing for a murder is bigger than that. But, you know, and on the way there, I started thinking, I go, well, it's about time she faces up to what, you know, she's done. And then I go, they're not even going to get there. Mm-mm. They're not even going to go there. There's no way, you know, and then, you know, she does it again.
Yep.
You know, Cora, oh, man. So
as evil as we thought Regina was. Regina is a freaking saint compared to Cora. Yeah. Cora's much worse because, no, Cora didn't enact an evil, awful, bad curse. Cora didn't try to kill, you know, these people. I mean, well, she kind of has, but not to the same extent like we've seen Regina do. Cora's worse because she manipulates everybody into doing these horrible, awful things they don't want to do, especially Regina. She's, ugh.
Cora is just like fill in the blank.
Well, she's manipulative and she's
just like
Rumpel.
Right. Exactly. He doesn't hardly do anything if he can find someone who he can fill a need, fill a void, and then they can do stuff for him.
Right.
Whether it's a wraith or whatever. I mean, that's his...
But everything he does is because he wants to find his son. Literally everything he's done is because of his love for his son, right? That's what we've seen.
He does have passionate moments of, you know, turning people, a butcher into a pig or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's certain things that he'll do. But
correct, you know. because he was tired of being, you know, a coward. So there's a lot of it, but most of the impetus that drives him is his love for his son.
Right. I'm just saying they're very similar. That's all.
Totally agree with you. Oh, I'm not disagreeing. They're very similar. Mm. But I think the driving force that we haven't seen yet behind Cora right now, it appears pure evil. There's nothing good about her at all. Not one thing about her is good. I mean,
well, okay. Let me say this.
We just haven't seen her backstory. We don't know why she's the way she is.
There you go.
And that's where I was getting to is with Regina again. We thought she was pure evil too until we saw her backstory, and all of a sudden now we're like, whoa, it's understandable. With Cora, it'll be real interesting to see what her backstory is because. Is there anything about her that's redeemable at this point in time? And is her backstory a noble, if misguided, one? Like Regina's was noble, if misguided.
Yeah.
Very misguided. Rumpel is very noble, but extremely misguided as well.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to get Cora's backstory and Rumpel's backstory. And once we have that,
Oh, you mean the two of them together?
No, well... Even maybe before that, I mean, there had to be, yeah, I mean, you're right. I guess it's enough. I guess we've learned
enough about him. I think, about his backstory to at least understand the driving force behind him. And I mean, that, and it's starting to come out now where everybody else knows it too. They understand that he's looking for a son. So if they get that's, you know, if they start thinking about that's, because again, you know, to kind of put myself in Mary Margaret's shoes a little bit, she would do anything to save her daughter. Same thing with, you know, Charming. They would do anything to save their daughter. Difference is they understand the difference between good and evil. And knowing that good is the better choice makes them the good guys. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They have the same driving force that Regina or actually Rumpel has. Do anything to save their kid. To make sure their kid is happy and safe and well, and to have their kid with them. And now we're seeing Regina do the same thing. Problem is Regina allows anger to drive her, whereas they don't go evil because of that. Snow started to, but I haven't seen Charming do that.
So Ruby has quick reflexes.
Yeah, she does.
To save people jumping off of piers.
She's a wolf.
That we walked on. Steveston.
Yes.
And so we see the two brothers now, and then we see Victor actually bring back Gerhardt.
Well, go back to the pier. That little conversation on the pier.
Oh, yeah, the confessional. Yeah.
That was That was really good. That was awesome, Ruby.
Yeah. Huh.
That was really awesome. Just not just the reflex stuff, but sitting there and talking to him and being able to, I mean, remember she was so, you know, oh, I can't do anything. What am I going to do? And she was so down on herself, and she's really come into her own. And I loved that part of her. I thought that was great that she had the, you know, the wherewithal, because she could have just said, you know what, screw you. You're going to be a jerk. Jump. I'm not going to, you know, I don't care what you do, but I thought it was really cool. And she probably more than anybody else has a lot to fear, because if people really do know that she's a werewolf, they hunt the wolf, or they, you know, try to study her. You know what I mean? Like she's got a lot of, you know, concern, and she's expressed it a couple of times. We can't let outsiders in here. We can't let the outside world in. So, I mean, I think it was really very cool that she turned around and said, look, you got to save this guy. If not for no other reason, you got to do it for you, because you can't, you know, it was a really good conversation, a really cool conversation they had.
Well, I'm still not trying to kind of bend in the whole womanizer thing into Frankenstein. But what I will say is this, if you do think back, Whale and Ruby have had some interesting moments.
Flirtatious.
He obviously appreciates the way she looks in red high heels and a skirt and all that. And he also had that discussion with her at the bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody kind of shooed him away.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, it's interesting, at least up to this discussion tonight. So if it goes anywhere, we'll say, well, told you so.
And that's,
if not.
Yeah, that conversation again with Ruby, you know, like I was saying, I mean, she's really matured a lot in this, in the last few episodes, in the season, actually. She's really, really matured. You can just tell the way she carries herself, the way she dresses. She's becoming a really pretty amazing character. I really like her. Just had to throw that in there.
So then Belle got the chip cup.
Wait, go back to the brothers. He brought him back to life. We went back. We skipped back.
Yeah,
so, yeah, he brought him back to life. And then he went completely bananas because he was not completely ready to be. He wasn't fully. Acclimated is a better word. I was going to say rehabilitated, but that's not really it. He wasn't really fully acclimated. And then he ended up killing their father.
Right.
Which he did because the candles, but then the candle was the thing that got him upset, right? It was the fire, and that's typical Frankenstein, and the Frankenstein's monster is the fire. However, what really set him off, which was really interesting, was when the father was berating Victor.
Right.
That was the thing, the anger, and even though he was not fully Gerhard, as you know, we would expect to see Gerhard, the fact that he still obviously somewhere deep inside of him had that love for his brother that he couldn't handle watching their father attacking him verbally and, you know, being mean and nasty to him. And so that set the monster off.
Yep.
And it was just very... It proved that there was still a little tiny bit of him in there somewhere, you know? And then when he beat the crap out of their father and killed him, and then he looked up and it was Victor, he even said, you know, I mean, it was that was gut wrenching. And like I said, that guy who played him, wow, he did such an amazing job. And the makeup, even though it was black and white, you can tell the makeup was amazing. So the makeup artist deserves major big time gold stars for that too. Anyway, so the next thing we were talking about, unless you wanted to add to that scene.
Well, I just wrote that Greg and Belle are new to town. And so in a way, and actually Gerhard as well, they all three basically have a do-over, you know, and Greg kind of rolled into town. I have an idea that he was wanting to go there, sent there on a mission to go there and didn't just happen upon it. And I think that's going to be his story. Say, look, I was whatever, because I think he's looking for something or someone. And I think he's in the area where he will find that.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know who the her is. I have no idea. But
it may not even be a female at all.
Possibly. You know, I'm thinking maybe it's a wicked witch of the west or east or whatever. Possibly. I don't know. But maybe someone's stuck somewhere that can't get out of some place. And, you know, basically it's kind of the way that, that Regina sent or Regina wanted a son, let's say, or had a desire for a son. I don't know that Rumpel was sent or if he left, but he knew that there was an opportunity to fill that. And so, you know, somehow he knew that.
Yeah, Rumpel could not have left.
Right.
So how he managed to arrange for Henry to appear is going to be real interesting when they finally show that. Because you know that's got to come at some point in time.
But so we had the scene where Dr. Frankenstein, it's still funny me saying it, with the gun to his brother's head, wanting to, I think, out of a heart of put him out of his misery.
Right.
And not kill him, but actually kind of relieve him of, you know, just the, it's, he wasn't right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
but he couldn't do it.
I know.
Yeah. And he couldn't do it because he loved his brother too much.
Yeah.
But I also think part of him was wanting so desperately for that reputation he was trying to convince his father needed to happen. So I think there's a dual purpose in why he couldn't do it. He loved his brother. His brother was all he had left because both their parents are now dead. So he had to, you know, I think that would be really difficult. You know, that would be, I know I wouldn't be able to do something like that.
Well,
and that scene, like I said, I want to go back to the actor who played Gerhard was phenomenal in that scene. That was gut-wrenching and heartbreaking. And it was very, I mean, I actually sympathized or felt very, very badly for Frankenstein.
Like I said, I wish we had seen this before the doctor.
Yeah.
So I said it before, I'll say it again, and that's the last time I'll say it. Okay, so it was kind of funny to kind of go back, Ruby saying, look, I'm the werewolf and you're Dr. Frankenstein. So it's just kind of funny. Those are conversations that you really never hear.
Right.
You know, unless it's like a comedy movie, you know.
Yeah.
But no, see, Greg is new to town, and he's acting like this is kind of a big shock to him. But actually, you know, he is now informing this her of all the things that he has seen. And he's making Emma believe that he's kind of not really with it, and he didn't really say anything. And so Emma's like going, well, thank goodness, because, you know, I don't know how I'd explain all this stuff. But Bell was given the chip cup, and he was hoping, Gold was hoping, that it would be something that would trigger her memory.
Well, he even said he enchanted it.
Oh,
so all she had to do was focus on it, and it would help. But see, she was so terrified of him, had no idea who he was. I mean, he kissed her while she's out of it. And then... But here's the thing. Okay, I want to go back to this because I think this is going to be a really important piece at some point in time. I don't know if you paid attention to this or not, but I, of course, did because I love Rumpel. And I really like Belle a lot. And I want them to be together and I want them to be happy. But when he kissed her, she was still half asleep and she smiled. So my thought process on this is that she subconsciously knew it was him. somewhere in the deep recesses locked up in her mind. She knew it was him kissing her. And then it was kind of like she got brought out of the dream. And when she woke up, it was him. And she didn't, it was like her memories all of a sudden, like her memories are intact in the dream state, not in reality. So in when she's awake in her in this reality, she's not going to know who he is or even really who she is. And I think that that may come into play at some point in time. So we may see that fire room at some point in time down the road or something else similar to that. Just throwing that out there. But that whole scene was gut-wrenching for me as well, because I'm thinking to myself, oh, and the worst part was when she slammed the cup against the wall and shattered it.
Well, I expected him, to go over and finish off Hook, but he did not. He went and he cashed in probably the thing that he cherished maybe a little less than the cup. Is his promise or his deal he made with the Savior, who has magic and who has a heart that cannot be taken out.
Right.
Emma, to go with him and find Bay.
Yep.
So.
Well, that orb thing where he pricked his finger.
Right.
That was very, very similar to the whole Sleeping Beauty thing and the dream thing and what have you.
Yep.
And the fact that he dripped the, you know, the drop into the orb and it showed, revealed on the map exactly where Bay is, supposedly. So that'll be interesting.
Well, and you know.
But here's the thing. I think he purposely didn't go kill Hook because he knew that wouldn't do him any good. And he may, in reality, though he doesn't want to admit it now, he may have use for Hook later.
True. I think actually it goes back to Bell wanted him not to.
And there's that too. And, yeah, that's very valid.
The thing that was interesting to me is as passionate, as angry as he gets.
Yeah.
I think when she smashed the cup, I would have not thought too kindly about that, because that was the one thing that they shared. That was the one thing that he cherished. You know,
he even said, it's my most prized possession.
Yeah. And you would have the conversation of, well, if you don't care about that, then you don't care about us and all that. And I couldn't tell whether all bets were off with them or not until, you know, he said, if anything happens to Belle, when I get back, I'll kill all of you. And so,
yeah, you know, which I don't think they would allow anything to happen to her anyway. But what did strike me with that whole thing was he said that was his most prized possession, but that's not entirely true, because his most prized possession was the scarf that was Bay's.
Right.
Because if it had been the cup, if that was truly his most prized possession, he would have put the potion in the cup.
But Rumpel does say what people want to hear.
Exactly.
And so.
Exactly.
You know.
So I don't know if he. I believe he does. I believe he does love her. I believe he really, truly loves her. But I think his heart is divided and always has been because of Bay.
Right.
So there's that. Now, I'm going to go back to that whole Emma interviewing Greg. The stranger. I thought that was very funny before she went in there and they're like, okay, let's go. And they're like, she goes, no, are you kidding me? We're trying to convince him that this is a normal place. And in a normal place, the sheriff doesn't bring her parents. That was one of the funniest lines I've ever heard. That was very amusing. And then the looks on their faces were, it was very priceless, because, you know, Mary Margaret was like, okay, well then we'll be right here. And, you know, she was like, but I want to go help. And which is funny, because that's very adventurous, very typical of, you know, the Mary Margaret or Snow White, who is a fighter and a fierce warrior chick, having to sit on the sidelines. And yet, you know, last episode, she was like, I'm tired of fighting.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think you still love the adventure. I think it's still there. I think she still wants it. So. That was kind of funny. But when she went in there and was talking to him, that whole exchange was one big fat lie, and I knew it was. I could tell by the way he was talking to her. I could tell, and I'm like, Emma, you're giving away too much. Just ask him a question. Because she was kind of leading him into, what did you see? You know, and I was like, that's a tip off that she knows he saw something.
Yep.
That's why he lied like crazy. So, but then the other interesting thing is, I recognized him instantly. The actor who played him, Ethan Embry, he's been in a few really good things. Big movies that I really enjoyed. And the first time I ever saw him was in a Disney movie called Far Off Place with Reese Witherspoon. They were both like 16 years old. It's a great movie if you haven't seen it. So anyway, and it's adventure, so you'd like it. But that was a whole big fat lie. And then when she went down there, you know, they're like, well, and she's like, nope, he didn't see a thing. We're all clear. And I'm like, no, you're not. Yeah. And then we saw that he actually grabbed the phone. Yeah, no, I'm fine. But you are not going to believe what I saw.
So there is a whole bunch to this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little off. I need to see this episode, I don't know, about 8 more times, really kind of get it all. There's a lot to it.
There is so much to this episode.
But,
it was very, again, it was beautifully written, and it was Jane, so... Yeah. Thanks to Jane for that.
Thanks, Jane. She must have been listening to Colleen's
because let's talk about, that was the one thing we didn't talk about. So we want to talk about Henry and the cereal bowl, sitting there having their cereal, and Henry's like, what happened? Granny didn't say anything. And that whole exchange was hilarious. I mean, the conversation about Whale and, no, it was really nothing. And they're all looking over his head at each other because they all knew that they were trying to keep him from hearing about Mary Margaret's little one-night stand with Whale. But the other thing was that he said, wait a second. So that's who Whale is. He's not in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Frankenstein's not even a fairy tale.
Yeah.
So there must be other worlds mm-hmm. that got impacted by the curse too. So who else is coming to town?
Yeah.
And that's almost verbatim what I said.
Yeah, I know.
Which... I was kind of glad that they brought that up. So I appreciate if Jane is listening to us, which she may or may not have been, but if she is, thank you for at least acknowledging what I had said.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I absolutely do appreciate that because that is a question. It just didn't fit. So, and again, there's that, you know, okay, I can see where they're going to kind of go with this.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they don't go anywhere else ridiculously crazy.
Well, we're going to stop there.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Because Frankenstein, I can somewhat see how they pulled him in.
Right.
Barely.
Yeah.
Still would have liked for him to have been somebody else, but he is who he is, so we're going to move on.
Right.
But I just...
Save a little bit for the live show.
We're fine.
Just a little.
No, we're fine. Trust me. We'll have plenty
to
talk about.
It's the longest first thoughts ever.
That's okay. It's okay because there's a lot to talk about.
Okay.
So all I'm saying is I appreciate that it was acknowledged. I appreciate that it was stated the way it was stated.
Yep.
I hope and pray they don't go a little wackadoodle with characters who really don't have any place at all in this world.
Oh, it's up to them.
I know it's up to them, but I'm just really hoping. Mm. That's all I'm saying. It's my wish.
You better talk to Jane.
I can wish, can't I?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Hope and dream.
Let's stick with who we have. Because there's plenty there. We don't need to introduce Luke Skywalker.
So thanks for hanging in there with us on weeks, off weeks, and everything in between.
You were off. I was on. But anyway.
I know. I was totally off.
I'm on 10.
All night.
I'm on 10 tonight because I'm telling you, I liked this episode.
I should have just went in the other room because that would have been better.
No, it's fine, sweetie. And I like that. I'm telling you, I like this episode. I figured like you this would. Episode
I figured
a lot.
You would. I had a feeling. So, okay. So thanks, everyone, for downloading, listening, checking us out for the first or more than the first time. And so Colleen liked this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good news. And so sometimes you watch an episode and you go, oh, that was bad. And then the next week it's like, well, that was kind of better. And then you go, man, that was incredible. So
yep.
That's really the story of this show. So I want to send big love out to everybody.
Yep.
And if you have a day off tomorrow, great. If yes. not, and you have to work like me, then hang in there. And we will be back for the live show coming up this Saturday.
Yes.
7 p.m. Pacific time. Please send in your emails and voicemails.
Yes.
Please make your voicemails concise. Please. Pretty please. We're trying to kind of make the shows flow more concisely. So we appreciate
and
it.
And then remember, after Saturday, yep. we're taking a little break because of the fact that the show is going to be on break for a few weeks.
Yep.
So when it comes back, then we'll be back with First Thoughts again. So, but this Saturday, join us and we'll have fun.
Absolutely. And we will talk to you soon. See you guys.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for being a part of this podcast. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. This is Wayne Henderson, the voice of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. And if you want to know more about how my voice acting services might work for you, check out MediaVoiceOvers.com. And now, all of us here at Roni's Own Media and MediaVoiceOvers.com look forward to sharing the love and enjoyment of the Once Upon a Time TV show next time. Take care.